The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Now, this is not good news because Zaporizhzhia is the largest nuclear plant in Europe, and any attack around a nuclear plant is dodgy business because it could lead to a nuclear fallout, a nuclear spill. That is something that the International Atomic Energy Agency has been warning about for months already. You can see Zaporizhzhia just behind me. It's on the limit of the zone controlled by the Russians and pushed back by the Ukrainians.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. It is good to be here with you today. Thank you for joining me. Happy Thanksgiving Eve, if there's such a thing, right? It's good to be here with you. I know you're probably traveling or getting ready for tomorrow. We got a lot to talk about today. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about Thanksgiving coming up. I want to bring you up to speed on some news today, too. That audio you just heard, there was a UN atomic watchdog chief, a guy named Rafael Grossi, and he denounced the targeting strike at Ukraine's Russian-controlled nuclear plant, calling it a stop of this madness. And that's really what it is. I keep praying for some sort of peaceful resolution. I know it's coming. I know we're going to see it. I'm actually kind of excited about it because after the consecration's been done, you know, we're going to look back and you're going to really see with very clear vision how certain events took place and why certain moves were the wrong moves and how this thing came to, let's say, I think it's going to be a peaceful end. I really do in the end. We need to pray, though. Continue to pray for the division in the world. I want to pray for your families, especially, because I know tomorrow at Thanksgiving, boy, there could be some fights around the Thanksgiving Day table, especially if you talk politics. A little bit later, let's discuss that. I'd love to know what you do. A friend of mine actually said she got an email from one of her relatives that said, no political talk at the dining room table. Thanksgiving politics are banned. Because depending on what side of the aisle you're on, I mean, people are incredibly passionate about it. And I'll share a story with somebody who I know who just, man, you couldn't even talk politics with them. It just gets ugly. So, there's some Catholic roots to our Thanksgiving background too. I'll bring you up to speed on that. There's some very interesting history you may not know. You know me. I love history and I love giving you some of that inside, some of that untold history, if you will, you know, give you kind of a Catholic perspective on what went down. But, you know, speaking of international news, the United Nations, right? Let's talk about them. According to them, Iran getting very close to having the ultra-purified uranium they need to make a nuclear bomb. And I was having a conversation with somebody over lunch today about this, and I said, you know, if they get that bomb, Israel's not going to stand for it. You know, we're going to see another major conflict. They recently upgraded their centrifuges, and it makes it easier to reach the kind of purity they need for weapons-grade uranium. And the International Atomic Agency, the energy agency, says that the rogue nation has reached right now about 60% purity. 90% is what you need for a nuclear weapon. So National Review was reporting that this comes in response to the IAEA passing a resolution calling for Iran to cooperate with the ongoing investigation into traces of uranium across three undeclared sites in the country. So they're moving towards nuclear weapons. Look, more nuclear weaponry does not make the world a safer place. It makes it a more dangerous place. We really need to pray. For North Korea, the same way. They're trying to march towards that. But let's just pray for peace. You know, I want to live in a time where we know nations will never use these and that war will be something of the past. I hope one day we at least evolve to that point. Other changes, Dr. Fauci, right? The outgoing head of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease. He was at a White House press conference, and he was asked about the GOP investigations. Let me share a little bit of what he had to say.
I can answer his question.
Yeah.
He says,
see,
I'll answer it.
I'm a good.
I'm just trying to keep on
all right.
Time.
The answer is, if there are oversight hearings, I absolutely will cooperate fully and testify before the Congress have asked. You may not know, but I've testified before the Congress a few hundred times, okay, over the last 40 years or so. So I have no trouble testifying. We can defend and explain and stand by everything that we've said. So I have nothing to hide.
So I love the press conference. Did you hear his handler? I'm just trying to keep him on time. Yeah, I didn't want him to answer that question. If there's an oversight hearing, they're going to be He's going to be grateful, he says. He's going to cooperate fully and testify before Congress. It's expected that the new Congress, you know, of course, it's in Republican hands right now. It's going to, they're going to be calling Dr. Fauci to testify, especially on the origins of the virus. And this is one of the, there's two things. I'll just throw this at you. I'm kind of stream of consciousness with you right now, okay? It's one of those days. Fauci, one thing. I mean, shouldn't we have more transparency on where COVID-19, which took so many lives around the world and racked, just actually created, just wreaked havoc on economies, you know, affected learning for children, affected relationships, loved ones were lost? I mean, shouldn't we know how this thing began so we never see it again, or we can have the proper safeguards and protocols against it? Right, we should know the origins of the virus. That still has not come true. The other thing, just a side note, I've been thinking about this. How come nobody, where are these investigative journalists? You know, that Dobbs case, you know, that helped to overturn Roe v. Wade, when that was leaked. Why haven't we found out who leaked that? First time that has ever happened in the history of the Supreme Court, in one of the biggest cases in our nation's history. You know, I got a theory on it. It's totally unsubstantiated. You know, some people say, oh, it's got to be the clerk of one of the liberal judges. It's got to be a clerk of one of the... What if it was one of the justices? What if it was one of the liberal justices who actually leaked the case, knowing she was outnumbered or he was outnumbered, right? And it came to light. They did their investigation, and now the court knows. What would that do to the credibility of the court if there was a justice who leaked that information? Maybe that's why it hasn't come to light. Maybe those inside know. There's been no reporting on it. There's been no follow-up on this. This was a terrible breach. Terrible breach. And yet there's radio silence right now. I'm just, like I said, I'm just having one of these days where I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't know. Who knows how that information got? But why aren't we hearing more about it, right? I want to know the origins of COVID-19. I want to know where it came from. Was it from a meat market? Was it some bats? Or was it from a lab where they're working on gain of function and it got out, huh? Or somewhere else? And who leaked that Dobbs report, huh? Who did that? Interesting questions that are out there. One day I hope we'll know. I don't know. We still don't know who shot Kennedy, right? So you don't know. But it's expected that this new Congress is going to call Fauci to testify. They want to know where the origins of this is. Fauci continues to insist that the COVID virus developed naturally. It was passed on through some animal to human transmission at a wet market in Wuhan. There are emails, though, showing that the U.S., of course, they funded the gain-of-function research at this very lab, right? This Wuhan Institute of Virology. And the lab leak theory is finding more acceptance among researchers now. I just wish China would come through, right? Why not? Hey, something else to keep an eye on. I don't know about you. My son had to pick up some medication for something. He goes, Dad, I went there and they told me they were out of it. I had to come back and go get it later. That's really weird. I heard from somebody else. They needed a cream or something like that from the pharmacy. Didn't have it, right? And I'm thinking, you know, pharmaceuticals, you know, or maybe you're running into it with your own meds. I don't know. That's just one case. But I know a lot of products that people are buying online, it's supposed to be there. They're getting messages now. Oh, delayed. Sorry, it hasn't shipped yet. Well, you might be in for a very late Christmas. And here's what I'm thinking. There is talk right now, and I don't know how this will shake out. Remember earlier in the fall, I'll back it up for a little bit for you. There was a railroad strike, and it was just barely averted the very last minute. President Joe Biden came in, took credit for, you know, averting that. And that happened because there were proposed agreements that were reached between dozens of unions that represented the workers in the railroad companies. So now that the union members have had time to look over the contracts, four of those unions have voted them down. So apparently the sticking point is paid sick days. The union want 15 days a year, while the companies only want to add one more personal day to their days off. The other eight unions have all agreed to it. So if four walk off the job, they won't cross the picket lines. Here's a little bit more. I'll share a little bit more. It's an explanation of the impact of what's going to happen if, let's say, this doesn't get meted out. Because you're going to see, you think supply chain issues are a problem? If we don't have our trains, problems are looming. Listen.
40% of all goods and commodities moved around the United States are moved by rail, which is why the potential for a labor union strike with the railroads continues to bubble up in the news. A shutdown in rail freight would leave cars and engines stranded on the track, costing the United States an estimated $2 billion per day that the shutdown lasts. 8 of the 12 railroad unions have voted yes on the most recent compensation package for no. That comp package includes a 25% raise, $11,000 in immediate back pay, and a $1,000 per year bonus going forward. Now, I don't think a strike will stand for any long period of time if it goes through at all. But if any one union does strike, the rest of the unions will honor it and join them on the picket line. However, the big catch with the majority of unions voting yes on the most recent deal, Congress can force the rest to accept it and outlaw a strike. Congress doesn't want to do this because Democrats control the House and Democrats are very union friendly. However, the Democrats were the ones that actually negotiated this deal, which really isn't bad for the union. President Biden stepped in directly in the months before the vote to help the negotiation. So it stands to reason that Congress will force them to accept it should a strike happen. On the market side, if you're curious, railroads are some of the best performing stocks of the past decade. On average, the majors are up over 425%.
Pretty significant number. So the deadline, just so you know, is a great feast day, December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. So maybe we should pray to Our Lady to resolve this issue, right? So Reuters is reporting that if the strike does happen, guess how much it's going to cost our economy per day? Take a guess. I'll give you multiple choice. Is it going to cost $2 million a day? Is it going to cost $200 million a day? Or $2 billion a day? $2 billion per day. You got it if you went with the high number. $2 billion a day to our economy. And not only would freight rail be shut down, so would Amtrak, you know, since they run on the same rail. So I this is going to affect travel for Christmas. It's just going to be a mess. So I hope the compromise gets worked out soon. Again, I don't know what the Biden administration is saying today because I thought they had resolved that issue. But they once again have done something that I think resonates with some people and has divided others. They postponed repayment of student loans. So this is still underway, right? And I don't know where you stand. If you've got student loans, you're probably rooting for this. If you got kids that got student loans, you're probably rooting for this, right? But you know, if I had to look at it very objectively from the 30,000-foot view, I mean, it really is not fair to a lot of Americans. But the Biden, and this is going to be appealed in court, but the Biden administration says, okay, a federal district court in Texas, they, after being told by this court in Texas and by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals that they, you know, can't offer loan forgiveness without congressional approval, the Biden administration is asking the Supreme Court to still rule in its favor. So in the meantime, while this is being proposed, the president decided to extend the postponement period, even though he said earlier this year the current proposed postponement period would end on the very last day of this year. This would be the last one. So it's getting pushed out. Some news for you if you have a student loan. The White House actually released a video of the president earlier this week regarding his plan when it comes to student loan. Here's a few words from the president.
Folks, I want to give you an update on my student debt relief plan. As Americans continue to recover from the pandemic, my administration has been working to provide student debt relief to millions of working and middle-class families across the country. But Republican special interests and elected officials sued to deny this relief, even for their own constituents. But I'm completely confident my plan is legal. But right now, it's on hold because of these lawsuits. We're not going to back down, though, in our fight to give families breathing room. That's why the Department of Justice is asking the Supreme Court of the United States to rule on the case. But it isn't fair to ask tens of millions of borrowers eligible for relief to resume their student debt payments while the courts consider the lawsuit. For that reason, the Secretary of Education is extending the pause on student loan payments while we seek relief from the courts, but no later than June 30, 2023. Which would give the Supreme Court an opportunity to hear the case in its current term. Payments will resume 60 days after the pause ends. I'm never going to apologize for helping working class and middle class families recover from the economic crisis created by the pandemic. And I'll continue working to make government work to deliver for all Americans, for all Americans. This is important.
That's President Biden on student loans. It's a continuing story. We'll see how it ultimately plays out, but just giving you some good news if you have it. Those loans have been postponed even further, and we'll see what ultimately happens coming up. I want to send a shout out to my buddy Jeff. If you are listening, Jeff, this story goes out to you. He is he works, let's say, in the meat industry, right? One of the major suppliers in our country. And I saw a story the other day, and I sent it to him. And I said, hey, good news. If you love steak or if you love roast beef, if you're a meat lover, researchers at the University of Washington, they've concluded that there is nothing harmful in eating unprocessed red meat, right? Go red meat. Who doesn't like a good filet or ribeye or, you know, the science on stuff. Isn't it crazy how it constantly changes? Do you remember when you shouldn't eat butter and margarine was a thing to eat, you know? And then they're saying, hey, maybe margarine isn't such a great idea. Butter's better, you know, or eggs were too bad for you, too horrible for your cholesterol. Then, hey, eggs are really good for you, you know? Red meat, stay away from it. And now, hey, there's nothing harmful with eating red meat. It's hard to really discern this, to process this all. But they went through actually years of studies that connected eating red meat to stroke and to cancer and to heart disease, and they concluded that all of them were, in their words, just shoddy, right? They say there were too many variables like trusting in self-observation and not taking into account if meat eaters weren't eating enough vegetables. And the website, there's a website, they're called Think Big. They reported that nearly all research is observational, and it can't tease out cause and effect in a convincing manner. Plus, is a 15% increase in cancer risk worth worrying about, they say. So these researchers took all that into account. They reached a conclusion that unprocessed red meat is okay for you to eat. So if you're not a turkey fan, there's an alternative for you. Hey, who was the first president to pardon a turkey? Anybody know the answer to that? According to Smithsonian Magazine, the first turkey to receive a pardon here in the United States was supposedly from Abraham Lincoln in 1863. It was supposedly at the behest of his son, Jack, or his son, Tad. His son, Tad, was the name of his son. Jack was the turkey that they had. And apparently Jack was going to be killed and eaten at Christmas. And I never grew up on a farm. I don't know if things are different, like if you raise a pig or a sheep or, you know, something else, you grow attached to it and you think, I can't eat that. You know, I don't know. Well, I guess that's how Tad felt about Jack. So Lincoln told his son, he was a good turkey. You know, I don't want him killed and supposedly pardoned him. But Reagan pardoned a turkey once. It has become an annual tradition. A little background here for you, a little maybe Thanksgiving Day trivia for you. The first president, I would argue, to unofficially pardon a turkey was Abe Lincoln, right? He said to the White House, look, save the bird. And my son's grown fond of it. And the president, too. Lincoln, believe it or not, was a big, big animal lover. But Lincoln didn't start the tradition. You're going to see a lot of that out there. He really was not the first guy to do this. And neither did Harry S. Truman, who's often credited as the father of the presidential turkey. Since Lincoln's time, there's been this very steady parade of turkeys that have been heading to the White House. And I'll tell you what, there have been a number of presidents and their families that have enjoyed them, you know. In fact, remember, there's a Time magazine article out there, if you get a chance to see it. There's an image of Eisenhower who's grinning, right? He is holding these carvings. He's carving a very large turkey, right? So you got the presidents getting ready for this. John F. Kennedy actually started a trend by publicly sparing a turkey given to the White House. And he decided after receiving this bird, it was November 19th, 1963, that it shouldn't stay as dinner. And the turkey was wearing a sign that said, good eating, Mr. President. Crazy with that. Yeah, things people had done in the past. JFK saw it. He spared the bird 3 days, actually, before he was assassinated, as you probably remember, in Dallas, Texas. So may his soul and all the souls of the faithfully departed, through the mercy of God, rest in peace. Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, right? All these subsequent presidents, they're all photographed at a turkey press conference with their guest of honor. And I don't know if it's 100% known if any of the birds survived their White House tour without being stuffed and dressed and served on a platter. I don't know, right? I don't know. But Reagan joked about pardoning a turkey during days after the Iran-Contra affair. But the bird was already scheduled to live its life out in a zoo. So President George G.W. Bush. Let me rephrase it. George H.W. Bush. I'm telling you, it's one of these days. He made the turkey pardon official when he took office in 1989. And since then, turkeys across our country, they celebrate it, right? At least one day a year. President Trump pardoned a turkey. Maybe we'll share a little bit of that with you coming up in a minute or two here. And, we'll see. The turkeys are bred to be eaten. They have a very short lifespan, believe it or not. The National Turkey Federation, which raises these birds for presidential pardon ceremony, say that that pardon bird will be lucky if it lives 2 years after it was saved as president. I had also read somewhere that Ben Franklin wanted to make the turkey the national bird. You know, we have the bald eagle as our national bird. I don't know the origins behind the eagle, but Franklin loved it. I mean, turkeys are quite interesting birds, and maybe a little bit later I'll share some more turkey trivia with you, because it's some fascinating stuff. How fast they can run, where they can fly, their vision. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff that I'll get into. But before we do that, I'm going to be joined by John Cribb coming up in a moment. I had a great conversation with this guy a couple of years ago on Abraham Lincoln, actually, and this Thanksgiving Day proclamation, where we are today. I'm going to share some of that with you. But the origins of Thanksgiving, really, we think we're at Plymouth Rock, right? And believe it or not, that's not really the case. These Protestants who came over were not the first to celebrate Thanksgiving in the country. Catholics were. And believe it or not, and a great trivia question for you. Do you know where the first Thanksgiving was? It was not in Massachusetts. It wasn't anywhere on the, in the Northeast. No, it was St. Augustine, Florida. Believe it or not, it's the oldest settlement in the United States. It was founded back in 1565 by Spanish Catholic explorers. That's where they first sighted land on August 28th. That was the Feast of St. Augustine. So they named the city after him. We're going to call this place St. Augustine. And then on September 8th, the Nativity of Our Blessed Mother, they came ashore with great fanfare. The history of our country, the Christian and Catholic origins of this country are amazing. You know, the Chesapeake Bay used to be known as the Bay of St. Mary. You know, the Mississippi was known as the River of the Immaculate Conception. So they touched down there on September 8th. They came ashore to the astonishment of all these natives, and a mass of Thanksgiving was held after a communal feast was celebrated with the local Saloy tribe. And it was the first communal Thanksgiving celebration in the first permanently settled European colony on American soil. A little bit of history you don't know, right? One final piece of trivia here you might want for this Thanksgiving. April 30th, right? 1598, very significant. Spanish settlers from Mexico set up camp in the American Southwest. They held a massive Thanksgiving. They named the land New Mexico in honor of God and their Catholic king. And a feast was held with Franciscan priests blessing the food before everyone ate their fill. At the end of the meal, plays were enacted with scenes depicting the conversion of the Native Americans first hearing about the Catholic faith. So happy Thanksgiving. I love its Catholic origins.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
In the year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians and a great abundance of food. We thank God for our homes and our food and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world with freedom and justice.
Amen.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, it's bottom of the hour, and it is great to be here with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. It's always such a pleasure to be able to spend my afternoons with you. And I mean that. I really do. And I hope you're going to have a wonderful and a safe Thanksgiving. You know, do your part to stay healthy and safe. So much going on in the culture. We're going to get through this. We'll be on the other side of it. And I think we have a lot to be thankful for, don't we? At least I do. I am grateful for, everything that I've been able to experience in the midst of all of COVID. I mean, God has still been
been very, very good to me. And I know he's been good to you, too. And it's been difficult for a lot of people who've lost jobs, businesses, you know, who have suffered financially, who've lost loved ones. So it's tough. I thought today we'd go back. If you take a look at the history of America, you know, there have been proclamations and declarations from many of our presidents, you know, Washington and Abraham Lincoln. When you think about, when we think the Thanksgiving holiday is here in the U.S., and you tend to think pilgrims, right? You think of the Mayflower, you know, 400 years ago, you know, being helped the following spring and summer by the Native Americans that they met. And, you know, we see these depictions of this wonderful feast and Thanksgiving, this abundant harvest in the fall of 1621, right? But what so many of us don't realize is that Thanksgiving Day, it would not have been established as a national holiday until 242 years later. And during all that time, there were individual states that actually had Thanksgiving days. But there was no single national day for Thanksgiving. I didn't realize that. I kind of thought this was a much earlier incarnation, but it really wasn't. It wasn't until 1863, when Abraham Lincoln delivered what was a very famous Thanksgiving Day proclamation, and that would be the start of it. And I'm joined today by John Cribb. He's the author of a new historical novel. It's called Old Abe, and it's he's a best-selling author who has written about subjects ranging from from history to education. And his work include the authoring of the American Patriots Almanac and The Educated Child, and both are New York Times bestsellers. And it's great to have him with us here today. You might have read him before. I've seen him. I love the Wall Street Journal. I get it every day. He's written in the Journal and, you know, the USA Today and the Tribune and Chicago and the Hill and Real Clear Politics and many other places. You can check him out. JohnCribbAuthor.com. Cribb's with two B's, okay? JohnCribbAuthor.com. John, great to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted. You know, my vision of Thanksgiving comes probably from childhood, you know, and you see the pilgrims with the Native Americans and this great feast, and then you learn what happened and how, you know, they ended up, for, instead of Virginia, up in Massachusetts. And but that's really not, you know, Thanksgiving as we know it. You know, I think of the pilgrims starting Thanksgiving. That was going on with Thanksgiving. Let's do this. Explain what happened from that first Thanksgiving dinner, if you will, because in some respects, I'm sure they gave thanks for that harvest, to, you know, Lincoln's proclamation. What was going on in the country? How was this celebrated? And where did the roots of all this come from?
Okay, yeah. It's a fascinating story. And like you say, the pilgrims in 1621, they held what we think of as that first Thanksgiving. But and they weren't the only people by any means to have, you know, celebrated a Thanksgiving, the day set aside, thanking God. The Spaniards, Spanish colonists back in the 1500s in the Texas Panhandle had a day of Thanksgiving. And the Spaniard colonists in Jacksonville, Florida. And when the English came ashore at Jamestown in 1607, they set aside a day for Thanksgiving. But we looked at 1621. And after the country got going, there were days of Thanksgiving sporadically. The Continental Congress set aside a day in 1777 after the Battle of Saratoga for you know, a day of Thanksgiving. And George Washington set aside a day for Thanksgiving for the Constitution. But as you said, it was a very, you know, kind of occasional thing. And some states, once the United States was formed, especially the North, would celebrate a Thanksgiving. Others did not. And those that did would, sometimes they'd have it in October, sometimes, you know, November, December, even January. It was usually around harvest time. But it's not until we get to 1863, in the middle of this horrible Civil War, that Abraham Lincoln sets aside a day for the whole nation together as one, yeah, to set aside a day of Thanksgiving for God.
Wow, I love it. And, of course, you know, there's the story of Josepha Hale, I think was her name.
Yeah, that's right.
I was surprised. She's the one who, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, she was the author of that nursery rhyme, Mary Had a Little Lamb, that you learn when you're a kid.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
I love that as a kid. I thought it was great. But she wanted a regular national day of Thanksgiving, right? Didn't she work behind the scenes on this? What was her role in all this?
She did, and she's sometimes called the mother of Thanksgiving. So she was a writer and editor for years and years at first at a magazine called Boston Ladies Magazine, and then at a magazine called Godey's Ladies Book, and which was one of the most widely read, if not the most widely read magazine in the country before the Civil War. So she was an important voice in the culture of the country. And she, way back in 1827, she starts to lobby for a national Thanksgiving Day. She thought it would be good for the unity of the country. And she starts writing presidents, beginning with Zachary Taylor, urging them to issue proclamations creating a national Thanksgiving Day. So she writes Abraham Lincoln in September of 1863, urging him to do this. So when he issues his famous proclamation setting aside the last Thursday in November as a day of Thanksgiving for the whole country, her 36-year campaign for a national Thanksgiving Day finally bears fruit.
Wow. Lincoln, and again, you're the historian here, but I've got tidbits of facts in the back of my head rattling around. I saw a video of President Trump, I think it was yesterday. He pardoned this beautiful white turkey, right? He was out there, and Melania was, he had this famous, pardon. Jake, do you have the audio of that? Let me run this. Here's the presidential pardon of the turkey. Here you go.
The first turkey to dodge the White House dinner table received unofficial clemency when President Abraham Lincoln's son, Tad, begged his father to spare his new friend. For the past 73 years, the National Turkey Federation has presented the National Thanksgiving Turkey to the president. Starting under President George H.W. Bush, these birds have received a formal pardon every single year. Today is my honor to present to you this year's lucky bird, Corn, and just in case we needed him, Cobb. Corn and Cobb. That's not too hard to remember, is it? These two magnificent gobblers were selected from the official presidential flock of 30 turkeys, some real beauties. They were raised by the chairman of the National Turkey Federation himself. Like so many presidential flocks, this one started in the great state of Iowa. These two turkeys sought to win the support of Iowans across the state by naming themselves Corn and Cobb. After today's ceremony, these birds will retire under the care of skilled veterinarians at Iowa State University, a tremendous university. Once there, people of all ages will be able to visit them and learn about poultry science, veterinary medicine, and the noble American tradition of farming. We love our farmers.
Okay, that's the president pardoning the turkey. And it made me think about that because, Lincoln, as we heard, was the first president to pardon the turkey. Is that a true story? And what do we know about these presidential pardons? Fill me in on the history on that.
Yeah, it seems to be a true story. The story comes to us from Noah Brooks, who was a very close friend of the Lincolns, a journalist, and spent a lot of time in the White House. And he somebody in the fall of 1863, somebody sends a turkey to the White House to be fattened up for a holiday feast. And Lincoln's youngest son, Tad, makes friends with this bird. He names him Jack. And people would look out the White House windows and see Jack following Tad around the grounds. Tad was out there playing. And one day, Lincoln's in a cabinet meeting, and Tad comes bursting in through the door with tears in his eyes and says, "Papa, they're going to kill Jack. You've got to stop them." And so Lincoln halts this cabinet meeting and tries to explain to Tad that Jack has been sent to the White House to be eaten. And Tad says, "But he's a good bird. It would be wicked to kill him. You've got to stop them." So Lincoln takes a card and writes on it that the turkey Jack is pardoned and his life is spared, and he gives it to Tad. And Tad goes scampering off to save his friend from the butcher's block. So Lincoln does become the first president to pardon turkey. Years later, as President Trump said in that recording, the National Turkey Federation begins sending birds to the White House. And there's some reports that Truman pardoned a turkey, but there's some question about that. And Reagan gave a pardon to a turkey, but George H.W. Bush really is the president that starts it, you know, turns it into an annual tradition.
Yeah, I remember when he did that. It was kind of cool. Just in terms of the history, I mean, we go back. It was strange parallels in some respects to what's going on here. I understand Lincoln was quarantined during the first National Thanksgiving Day season as well. And look, he lived in a tumultuous time, too. I mean, there was tremendous political divide in the nation. There was the battle over slavery, and we had the Civil War that would erupt. First of all, let's talk about that. What happened to Lincoln that he had to be quarantined? And then even just if you can give me a historical perspective of what's going on, I mean, Lincoln proclaimed a holiday, if I'm correct, in the middle of the Civil War.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
that's kind of strange to me in some respects. But maybe give me some history there. What happened to Lincoln in terms of being quarantined?
Well, he gives the Gettysburg Address 1 week before that, that he sets aside that day for Thanksgiving. So he returns from Gettysburg on November 19th when he gives the address. And by the time he gets back to the White House, he's not feeling too good. And the doctor looks at him, his name is Dr. Stone, and he determines that he has a mild form of smallpox. And so they immediately put Lincoln into quarantine or semi-quarantine, and they begin vaccinating everybody around him who, you know, came into contact with him in the White House. And he's laid up for 2 or 3 weeks. And that first National Thanksgiving Day that he had set aside, November 26, his personal secretary, John Hay, reported that the president was confined to his sick room. So he doesn't get to, you know, enjoy that feast on that first National Thanksgiving Day, I'm afraid.
Wow.
But the question about why he does this in the middle of a civil war is a good one. Basically, he says that there's a lot to be thankful for, even though this terrible war is going on. He points out that in his famous proclamation, he points out that the fields are still fruitful, so the crops are coming in. They are at peace with foreign nations, even though there's this horrible internal war going on. Settlements are pushing west. The population is actually increasing. But most important, freedom is on the rise. With the advance of the Union armies, and then the, of course, the Emancipation Proclamation, which had come on January 1st of 1863, millions of enslaved Americans are being freed. And Lincoln says that he says this is not the work of any mortal hand. He says these are the gracious gifts of God. Yeah. So in his proclamation, he sets aside a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens. Oh. He says,
what was Lincoln's faith like? You know, I don't. What do we know about that? I mean, his proclamation he gave was beautiful. I may share that a little bit later. Yeah. But what was his relationship with God like?
Yeah, it's just one of the things that really interested me and surprised me so much as I really, you know, dove into the research on my book, is that he was a man of such an incredibly deep faith, and it deepened as the war got on and got worse. He spent a lot of time. Of course, he didn't have a lot of spare time, but he spent a lot of time reading the Bible. He probably knew the Bible better than any president we've had before or since, or at least as well. He quoted it all the time. And a lot of his famous, you know, words like "a house divided cannot stand." That's you know, Matthew 12:25 and other gospels that he's quoting there. So he, you know, he came to see himself, as he put it, as a humble instrument in the hands of the Almighty. And he came to view the Civil War as God's way of both judging and punishing both North and South for the sin of slavery. And basically, you know, all this horrible bloodshed was God's way of cleansing the land of that sin. Now, I say he was deeply religious, but interestingly, he was distrustful of organized religion. He never joined a church. He went to church a lot, but he never officially joined a church his whole life, and he was never baptized his whole life. But nevertheless, he really was a man of deep faith.
Yeah, there's this little-known speech from President Lincoln. It dates back to 1865, and I was always struck by it. I had read it somewhere once, and he said something very startling, something that I think a lot of secular historians and almost everyone else ignored. And in that speech, it's widely perceived, you know, to be among some of his greatest. He talked exactly about what you were saying about the Civil War, not just as a societal conflict, but he almost saw it as a chastisement from God. Yes. And here's the line. He says, the Almighty has his own purposes. And he goes on to say that, you know, to say that the scourge of war between the North and South had been caused by slavery, it was what he described as the, quote, the woe due to those by whom the offense came. And I always was struck by that. I mean, he really saw, you know, man's sin resulting in this chastisement, you know. So it was a pretty spiritual view of what was unfolding in his own world, you know. And, of course,
he really does.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Finish your thought. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, he. There's an interesting scrap of paper that says just what you're outlining, that he historians think he wrote down around the time he decides to issue the Emancipation Proclamation in September 1862. It's noted as Lincoln's Meditation on Divine Will. Huh. And he says exactly these things. And then they show up again later in his second inaugural address. He, you know, he says this war was visited upon us by God because of the sin of slavery.
Hey, John, stay with me. I'll take a short pause when we come back. As I know, he also, you know, had national days of prayer and fasting for some of the problems he saw in the culture. I'm speaking today with a man you should check out. His book, he just came out. Old Abe is the name of the book. I'll tell you how to get it when we come back. Stay with me.
Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for being with me today. Hey, if you're just joining me, I am taking a look at Thanksgiving and in particular, Abraham Lincoln. It was back in 1863 that he issued that famous Thanksgiving Day proclamation and would start it nationally. So no better to talk to than the author of a brand new work of historical fiction, a book called Old Abe. You may want to check it out. It's John Cribb's first novel. And John's a very prolific writer. You'll see him writing all over the place. And if you want to check the book out, it's available at all major bookstores, of course. And, of course, his website, johncribbauthor.com, if you want to learn a little bit more about him. Hey, before we get back to Lincoln, and there's some interesting things about what he had that for Thanksgiving. The work, I want to talk about your work. You know, this is your first novel. It's a historical it's historical fiction. I mean, what made you decide to write and in this particular genre? Because there's so many books written on Lincoln right now. I mean, you couldn't count them.
Yes. Yes, you're exactly right. Somebody about 10 years ago tried to count all the Lincoln books and got to about 15,000. I think he stopped. So they say there are more books written about Lincoln than anybody in history except Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Yeah. But they're not that many novels, and I wanted to do it as a novel because I really wanted to try to bring him alive. So this book, Old Abe, that follows, it's the story of Lincoln during the last 5 years of his life. So it starts out with him at his nomination in the spring of 1860, and then you're just at his side every chapter, every scene as he goes through his presidency in the Civil War. So you're with him for famous events like the Gettysburg Address and the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, but a lot of smaller moments that make a life in full, like some of these holiday times that we're talking about. And I hope that the book will bring Lincoln alive as a flesh and blood man for them, and not just just that stiff image we see on the penny of the $5 bill. But if I can tell you just a real fast story,
go ahead.
I got a great call a couple of weeks ago. I was in the middle of another call. This phone call kept coming through. I kept ignoring it. It was a robocall. And finally, I looked at it. It was a D.C. area code. I used to live in D.C. And I worked for the Reagan administration long ago. But my memory kind of stirred, and I realized it was the White House exchange. So I picked up, and it was the vice president's office. And the vice president called me, and I've never met him before. But he tracked me down, and he said, John, I just want you to know I finished reading Old Abe last night, and it was so good, I just had to call him and let you know. And he's a huge Lincoln buff. He's from Indiana, where Lincoln grew up. And he wrote his college thesis on Lincoln and religion. He's a big Lincoln fan, and so that was a thrill to get a call from the vice president.
That's such a great story. How cool, huh? I love it. Yeah. I didn't know that he was a big Lincoln buff. That's something I learned today. It's new. It's cool. But to get a call from the White House, how neat. Hey, we have a few minutes left. I want to get your take also. Just Lincoln declares this Thanksgiving Day proclamation. How did they celebrate it? Did Lincoln celebrate it traditionally like we do? I mean, what did they eat for Thanksgiving dinner in the days of Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, well, in the White House, there's no record of a White House, official menu. They didn't keep those kind of records back then. But we can have an idea from diaries and news reports and that kind of thing, and from cookbooks of the day. And Sarah Josepha Hale, who we talked about a while ago, is the mother of Thanksgiving. Her magazine, Godey's Ladies Book, published a suggested menu, and so it's a pretty good guide. And so the menu is boiled turkey with oyster sauce, roast goose with applesauce, roasted ham, chicken pie, stewed beets, coleslaw, turnips, winter squash, mince pie, plum pudding, lemon custard, and cranberry pie.
Wow, I'm full to hearing
that. I don't know how Lincoln stayed slim after eating all that. But there was a lot of turkey eaten around the country. And the troops, when Lincoln issues this proclamation, the country does the best it can to make sure that soldiers get to have a Thanksgiving feast on that day. So a lot of money is raised and, food donated for them. And even, believe it or not, even southern states, a lot of them went along. And of course, some of them had their own Thanksgiving Day. So the South celebrated Thanksgiving Day, too, not necessarily on the day that Lincoln set aside. But they did observe Thanksgiving, too.
That's so cool. There was an interesting little fact that you highlight as well about Thanksgiving with Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln had a slaveholder at the table for Thanksgiving dinner during his first year in the White House. Tell me about that. Why did he do that?
Yeah, it's very interesting because that slaveholder was really probably his best friend. During his life, his name was Joshua Speed, and Lincoln met him way back in 1837 when Lincoln moved to Springfield, Illinois, which is the brand-new state capital of Illinois, and he moved there to practice law, and he boarded with Josh Speed. He shared a bedroom with him above a general store that Speed was a partner in, and Lincoln spent many happy hours sitting beside the wood-burning stove in that store with Speed and other friends talking politics and poetry and, all kinds of things. And so they became very good friends. So when Lincoln becomes president, of course, Josh Speed and his wife, Fanny, want to come to the White House and visit him. But he is a slaveholder. He has a large plantation outside of Louisville named Farmington, which Lincoln visited when he was a younger man, and they use slave labor to grow hemp. But when Lincoln's elected president, they come to the White House, and they spend the first Thanksgiving dinner that Lincoln's having in the White House with their friends. It's just a reminder of how complicated the circumstances were during the Civil War.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, just congratulations, John, on a work well done. And I would strongly recommend everyone pick up the book and read it and learn about what is probably everyone's favorite president. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Keep up your good work. Keep writing, okay?
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving, too. And thank you for having me, and God bless you.
Yeah, God bless you, too. It's John Cribb, and you want to check out his last name. It's two Bs, C-R-I-B-B. JohnCribbAuthor.com. The book is called Old Abe. It's his first novel, a historical work, but as you heard from his background, he's a best-selling author on a whole range of different subjects and issues. But the book, I'm really looking forward to spending some time diving into, and I know that you love it. Just, let me share a final thought with you on Abraham Lincoln. And I love what he had to say. What's amazing is that the proclamation that he issued for Thanksgiving, there's no question. If he issued it today, he'd be sued. There'd be calls for him to be recalled. Listen to these first two lines of this proclamation. He says, "The year that is drawing towards its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties, which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come. Others have added, which are of so extraordinary a nature, they cannot fail to penetrate and soften even the heart, which is habitually insensible to the ever-watchful providence of the Almighty God." He understood that all these things, these blessings that we have, come from the divine creator, from that watchful providence, as he puts it, of Almighty God. I love that line. Now listen to these lines. He says, population has steadily increased, notwithstanding the waste that has been made in camp, the siege in the battlefield, and the country rejoicing in the consciousness of augmented strength and vigor is permitted to expect continuance of years with large increase of freedom. No human counsel has devised, nor hath any mortal hand worked out these great things. They are the gracious gifts of the Most High God, who, while dealing with us in anger for our sins, have nevertheless remembered mercy. He saw God in the midst of all this as a merciful God. He looked at the blessings that this nation has been given as gracious gifts of the Most High God. I mean, Lincoln knew where these blessings came from, and he was not afraid to acknowledge it. I just think it's so profound. It's something that we should take to heart as well. I could share one more line with you. I don't know if I have time. Jake, do I have time for... it looks like I'm up against the clock. I'm going to take a break. I love what he had to say. If I have time, perhaps I'll share more with you. But I'll tell you what. Let me leave it at that thought. You know, I think we were very fortunate at the time to have Abraham Lincoln as our leader during the Civil War, time of societal unrest here and bloodshed. And I fear that leaders like him are becoming things of the past. Our society seems almost incapable of producing them, unfortunately. We need to pray for good leaders. We need to pray for our country. We need to pray for those given the noble charge of governing. I think, you know, we look at Lincoln and what he said. If we humble ourselves, if we beg God for mercy, we beg God for conversion and a new evangelization, perhaps he'll hear us. He'll answer our prayers with those blessings. So why not pray this Thanksgiving that God, as he's shown Lincoln...